Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Robert Young-Pelton, who's an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the publisher of Dangerous Magazine and has had first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include The World's Most Dangerous Places, Come Back Alive, Three Worlds Gone Mad, License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Young-Pelton.
Hi.
So, Robert, I just learned that the lawsuit that you had against Eric Prince, the founder of Blackwater, that's been in the courts for some time, I take it that the jury in Virginia, where Eric Prince lives, ruled against you.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because you deal with seven people who can only deal with the statements made by the people under oath in court. So I think sometime in March we'll be asking the judge for sanctions and to overturn the verdict because of a number of statements made by Eric Prince while under oath.
Mm-hmm. Meaning what? Did he lie under oath?
When you read the transcript, I think it'll be self-evident, but mm-hmm. he didn't want to be associated with the Somalia project, mm-hmm. Most likely due to the fact that it violated ITAR rules and the UN arms embargo. Mm-hmm. So he was very vociferous about his lack of connection to that, even though the data showed that he was directly connected and his tax return showed that he had a direct hand in it. So, I mean, these are things that people make decisions in court to do, but they have consequences in the long run.
Mm-hmm. But essentially, you sued him. I thought you sued him over an autobiography he commissioned you to do, and then he turned around and decided to make his own deal with the publisher. And then he countersued you, right?
Yeah, well, Eric didn't want me to talk about what was in the original book. So his goal was to basically silence me, and I refused to sign a I don't know what they call it, a secrecy or a NDA or something. But the bottom line is that, you know, Eric came to me in 2010, and I did an interview on it with him for Men's Journal. He came to me to help me in the Somalia project, which I did, and he came to me to help him protect the Blackwater brand, which I did, and he came to me to help me fix his autobiography, which nobody would publish. So I got him a publishing deal with Adrian Zakheim, and then he turned around and made his own deal with Adrian and then sued me because he forgot that I was the only guy that knew what was in the original book. So, I mean, that's what you get for doing business with Eric. But, you know, the bottom line is that we feel strongly that the statements he made, he didn't present much evidence because we presented all the documents, will lead to a sanction and a reversal.
And again, I'm speaking with Robert Young-Pelton, an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the publisher of Dangerous Magazine, has had first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include License to Kill, Hired Guns, In the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurist. So, Robert Young-Pelton, the fact that you've had long dealings with Eric Prince is the reason why I was calling you, because The Intercept recently published a report saying that Eric Prince, along with Oliver North, have pitched this idea of an alternative CIA to Mike Pompeo, the head of the CIA, and to the White House, and that it's gotten an encouraging reception. That's what you hear from some quarters. They, of course, are denying it. The NSC spokesman said nothing's happening. But some of my sources tell me that this private CIA of Eric Prince's and Oliver North's is well underway, and that the CIA veteran, John McGuire, is very actively involved in it. So what do you know about this?
Well, it's interesting because John McGuire was the guy that wrote the letter for Eric, the get-out-of-jail letter to Eric when five weapons were handed over to the King of Jordans at the Blackwater facility in March of 2005, but he didn't write that letter until 2012. And John McGuire was also one of the Iran-Contra trainers when he worked for the CIA, so they have a long history. And, you know, what you're seeing right now is Eric is machine-gunning ideas into the Trump administration, you know, not just this, but also aviation packages, mining ideas, et cetera, et cetera. And they're being met with mixed receptions because, you know, first of all, when you're doing deals like this, like a secret off-the-books spy organization, to have it published on the front page of all the news organizations is probably not a good sign. And then secondly, I don't think it's the Bush administration. I don't think Dick Cheney is his top cover anymore. So I think people are a little bit more concerned about, you know, the track record of what happens when you deal with these covert things and they go very, very wrong. And Iran-Contra is the perfect example.
Well, Oliver North is nevertheless a part of the package. And Pompeo shows signs of being a bit of a buccaneer, doesn't he? I mean, the fact that Trump got him to talk to a NSA dissident who has this screwy idea that the DNC hack was not done by the Russians but was done by a U.S. intelligence insider, that's not a good sign. So I wouldn't be surprised
if... What you're picking up on is this paranoia about deep state. And what the concept is that there are a number of Obama appointees or people who obviously are disposed to support, you know, the Democrat agenda, who are eagerly, you know, exposing things like meetings in the Seychelles, and whether that's a FISA, you know, event or whether it's just bad security, you're seeing a lot of aggressive exposure of clandestine, covert, and sort of secretive activities. And people are trying to convince members of the Trump administration, including Donald Trump Jr., that there is a conspiracy inside the intelligence agencies themselves to expose Trump and his followers. And so there was one story about the tinfoil room at the Trump Tower in which they were showing covert devices used to surveil people and telling people that we need to stop the surveillance and we need to set up our own counter-surveillance organization. So it's a very weird conspiratorial type of, almost a Watergate type of mindset in D.C. right now.
Well, Donald Trump has come up with all the craziest conspiracies, not the least of which is the Bertha one, and he talks with Alex Jones and regularly reads Alex Jones' InfoWars. So he's susceptible to the craziest stuff. Isn't that clear?
Yeah, so you have two camps. I mean, you have people that have worked within the CIA and the FBI and other law enforcement organizations who see real connections between, you know, shady players and these new sort of camp followers that hang around Trump Tower. And then you have people in power who really don't care what the media says or what the facts say or what, you know, the population is concerned about. So we're seeing a division down the middle where it's hard to tell who's telling the truth and who's setting up a conspiratorial attack or whether this is all just rumor.
So then what do you think is going on here? Because there's no question that McGuire, the former CIA guy, has had dealings with Eric Prince, particularly through the Hong Kong company, that Frontier Services Group, that largely work for the Chinese government. Prince also has an operation in the Emirates, where he has a private army. He could actually start a war in the Middle East. He's got the assets to do so. He did meet in the Seychelles with MBZ, who's a big player. He's basically the mentor of MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. So what's going on here? Is it this because of this loose conspiratorial-minded administration where all kinds of people can wander in and whisper crazy stuff in Trump's ear, although apparently the General Kelly tried to slow that down a little bit, having fired the bodyguard.
Yeah.
Still, what's going on? Is this just a bunch of camp followers, as you described them, trying to make a buck out of this extremely loose arrangement between governance and private interests known as the Trump administration?
No, I'll tell you exactly what's going on. The Trump administration wants a war with Iran, and they want a proxy war in which what they call the GCC, or the Gulf Nations, along with Israel, starts hammering away at Hezbollah in places like Lebanon and Syria. And then they want to accelerate that into sort of a Qaddafi-type overthrow of the Iranian government. And they're looking to start this war with sort of deniable freelancers. And, of course, if you can imagine the New York Times story about the Reflex Response Army, in which the UAE engaged Eric Prince to bring in Colombians and set up an entire support network for a private army, this was part of that movement where if we have a proxy begin hostilities with Iran, then we can accuse Iran of attacking Israel, attacking the West, and then we just accelerate it from there. So this is already happening. As you know, Israel bombed Hezbollah in Syria and made it very public. And you have to ask yourself, why is that the case? You know, we just recognized Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So there are clear steps towards a bellicose position against Iran.
Right, but the recognition of Jerusalem as Israel's capital really hung the Saudis out to dry and has really helped the Iranians with the Arab Street.
Yes, but this is part of the Washington view of how things have to be in the future. And if you go back to the Iran-Contra days and you go back to Ali North and the whole view of the Middle East in which we had enemies and the whole Dick Cheney office of planning in which we had to start a war, and if you remember that John McGuire just after 9/11 was training up Iraqis to go into Iraq to start a fake war. I mean, these things all click into play. So this is not a fantasy. This is actually being promoted in Washington.
So then what do the generals think about it? We're told that Mattis, Kelly, and McMaster, even though none of them have any affection for Iran, they're trying to restrain the Eric Princes and the other gung-ho types.
And Steve Bannon. Not forget the Steve Bannon.
Right, Steve Bannon.
These are men who have lost men and friends in war, and they're not going to make rash decisions. But they don't ultimately control the viewpoint of the president, and they don't necessarily rein in the activities of these camp followers who are coming up with all kinds of wacky ideas and seriously looking for private funding to do these things. So, I mean, we have to keep the eye on the ball here, that we have the same problem we had during the WMD crisis, where we have neocons pushing an agenda, not necessarily related to what America wants to do, because they have their own belief of how the Middle East needs to shake out and what America needs to do. So that's where these stories are bubbling up from. And you have to ask yourself why these are being exposed. I mean, you know, why are we reading all these stories about Eric Prince? And, you know, in the media in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and they all seem to relate to, I won't say covert, but I mean sort of privatized ideas on how to fight wars. And we're looking for proxies and people to conduct a specific agenda. And why is Steve Bannon, you know, banging the gavel and traveling around the world to China and the UAE having meetings?
Well, you know, if Steve Bannon's choices of candidates to run, like Roy Moore and Chemtrails Kelly in Arizona and the convicted felon in upstate New York, if those are his choices politically for candidates, God help us for his choices for who to go to war against.
Yeah, but be careful. These are carefully designed sort of IEDs put into the political landscape. You know, he's showing, with Roy Moore, you know, he survived that media assault and the accusations of improper behavior, and he's running for office. Now, think about that. I mean, not many people can survive that kind of blistering attack. You know, he's suggesting that Eric Prince is going to run in Wyoming. Eric Prince has never lived in Wyoming, so he's essentially throwing grenades into the political system, and we're laughing at it, but then watch what happens with Roy Moore.
Right, and Roy Moore alone could cripple the United States Senate.
So there you go. So these are very carefully calculated landmines placed into the political landscape, and we're seeing a new paradigm in political gerrymandering. We're seeing the press being sort of ridiculed and sort of almost like a Leninist approach where it doesn't matter what the media thinks, it doesn't matter what the public thinks. We know how to game the system, and that system is going to be gamed for an agenda that we don't quite reveal yet, but in, you know, 2 or 3 months, we will see our very bellicose approach to the world.
Well, I think within a couple of months, Trump's going to try and fire the special prosecutor. I think that's absolutely, they're signaling that so clearly. And now Fox News has launched their slime campaign to delegitimize Mueller and attack this Vietnam War hero, Republican, you know, bipartisan, highly admired person. And they're saying the most scurrilous things about him. So that ship's already sailed. So it's just a matter of time before I think we have some kind of a constitutional crisis, don't you think?
But watch the Soviet-style engineering of public shaming, you know, the use of, you know, long lists of people who accuse politicians of people who may not be a Weinstein or a, you know, Woody Allen or whatever, but suddenly getting torpedoed. And this is what you're seeing. It's a very Soviet concept of marginalizing people and pushing their way into the political spectrum. And at the same time, you know, if you looked at Eric Prince's presentation on Afghanistan, monetizing warfare. In other words, saying, oh, let's, here's a gunship and this and that. And, oh, look how much money there is in this province.
Right.
As if somehow that was a prize. So this is the new reality of the Trump political landscape. So, monetizing warfare.
Right. Monetizing warfare and playing this kind of Roy Cohn style of politics, after all, Roy Cohn being Trump's mentor.
Exactly.
So when you say, you know, suddenly politicians get slimed, I mean, it did strike me as being a little odd that Al Franken, suddenly a very promising, rising Democratic star, is suddenly out of business. And
well, he's baffled, but I think what you'll find is there's going to be a story in the next month or so that'll lay out the plan to get rid of these people. Al Franken was a comedian on a USO tour doing raunchy things. I wouldn't call it rape, and I wouldn't call it sexual harassment. It was just very well structured at the right time to take him out. And this is very Soviet. You know, this is the type of thing the Soviets used to do to marginalize candidates.
Right.
So this idea that truth doesn't matter, manipulating the media, insulting the media, ridiculing the media as a whole, so that people don't know who to believe, so that, you know, Trump's tweets suddenly have the same veracity as the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. This is a bizarre world, right?
Well, this is what they borrowed from Putin. This is the world that Putin's so-called political technologist Surkov developed. You know, this is the world that Bannon has brought from Putin. So, no, it's an extraordinary situation. This is a very scary time, and this is the tyranny of the minority. These people only have 35...
Pay attention to these stories. I mean,
yeah,
I would suggest that people pay attention to these stories, which may not hit dead center because they're attacking camp followers, or they're sort of bringing up, you know, things, proposals, ideas, people who are on the Trump, you know, breadcrumb trail, but aren't in the center of things. And this is what Trump is doing. He's allowing people on the sidelines to push these plans forward and monetize foreign policy and watch them slide into actual contracts and events. So it's a very dangerous time because we don't have accountability. We don't have a full understanding of what Donald Trump does every day other than drink Pepsis and watch TV. So we have people like Steve Bannon who are literally outside of government pushing a certain agenda, and we have people like Dick Cheney pushing an agenda. I mean, the old Bush administration, WMD people, want to go after Iran bad.
Right. Well, and you also got Jared Kushner with his best friend MBS shaking down the Qataris royals for $500 million for his underwater building. I mean, the mixture between Trump and the family's business and foreign policy is extraordinary. It's never happened before, where being elected to the White House, and not that he was really elected, but ending up in the White House is a ticket to increase your brand and shake down foreign potentates for money. What a deal.
Right. So they're attacking Mueller because he's focused on getting testimony, evidence, trying to sort out what the, you know, the Russia thing is, and he's getting closer and closer. Now, I'm not saying that the Russians made Hillary Clinton win the popular vote and then lose it because of the Electoral College, but I'm just saying that when responsible adults inject themselves into the White House, whether it be Kelly or Mattis or people like that, they're going to be starting to be pushed out now.
Right. Well, Pompeo is likely to be Secretary of State, and then Tom Cotton, God help us, the head of the CIA. So it gets worse. It doesn't get better. No, I agree.
Exactly.
Well, look, let's do a follow-up on this. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Read those articles. Pay attention to them because they're based on fact, even though they don't seem to hit the center point of what's going on in the media.
Which articles are you talking about?
I'm talking about people like The Intercept or BuzzFeed, who are not necessarily looked at as being, you know, mainstream media, but they're digging hard. It's enterprise.
I know. Talking
to people.
Yeah. No, I talked to some sources of mine that said that this story that The Intercept's come up with is much bigger than even they have. So, no, I'm going to stay on top of it. I thank you for joining us, Robert Young-Pelton.
Thank you, Ian. Always a pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Robert Young-Pelton, who's an author, filmmaker, journalist, and explorer. He's the publisher of Dangerous Magazine and has had first-hand perspective on the war on terror from direct contact with the world's most infamous jihadi, rebel, and insurgent groups. His books include License to Kill, Hired Guns in the War on Terror, and his autobiography, The Adventurous. We're going to take a brief station break and back speaking with a Bangladeshi-American lawyer about how the attempted suicide bombing in New York by a Bangladeshi immigrant might impact the Bangladeshi community.